All right, how's everybody doing? It is Wednesday here in Chicago, and it is another hot one. Hopefully everybody's doing well. I'm Mike Jeffers, Chicago Jazz Magazine, chicagojazz.com, and of course, welcome to Chicago Music Revealed. Yes, this is episode 69, I believe, today. Episode 70. What am I talking about? And there's my theme song ending out, thanks to Craig Pilo out there in L.A. Always have to thank him. So episode 70, I am happy to have everyone watching here and commenting, liking, sharing. As I always say, if you like what you hear, if you enjoy the guest, leave us a comment, ask us a question, be happy to relay that. But I know that a lot of you are shy, but don't be shy. I always get a lot of comments after this ends and it goes live up on YouTube and on Chicago Jazz Magazine, on chicagojazz.com, and in Chicago Music Revealed. But hit us up today. We're on Chicago Music Revealed's Facebook page, but of course, cross-posting over to Chicago Jazz Magazine, as we always do, and the Chicago Music Guide. So we are all over the place on all the different platforms. Also, I should also mention that in addition to Chicago Jazz Magazine, I am also the Director of Entertainment and Programming at the Epiphany Center for the Arts, 201 South Ashland Avenue. We are going to be opening up in September, live music, and a whole lot more. So be sure to hit us up and sign up for our newsletter there at epiphanyshy.com. Of course, all of the announcements on performances. I've got pretty much all of September and half of October booked. We've got a lot of great series that we're going to launch. We're going to be starting to announce things next week, so stay tuned for that. And of course, you're going to hear everything right here at Chicago Music Revealed as we start to announce it. Now, I have a very special guest, and I'll tell you, I was checking out the recording. He's got a new recording called Night Visitors. It came out June 19th. And it's going to be a pleasure to bring Dave Bryant on to the show. I'm going to bring him up right now. Hey, Dave, how are you?
Good. How are you, Mike?
I'm doing well. I appreciate you taking a few minutes. As I told you before we came live, I was checking out the recording today, and this is like right up my alley. I mean, it is like there's a lot of interplay obviously happening with this recording, but man, it is grooving and it is creative, and there's a lot of layers to it. And I was listening to it, I was like, man, this is smoking. And I told you that before we came on. I mean, and I don't say that about everybody's recordings that I'm putting on here. So not that I'm like, the expert in critiquing, but I was really excited. And it's kind of like the right up my alley, where it's piano based drums. Of course, there's some electronic, there's some keyboard, and then there's some different improvisational aspects to it that we'll get into a little bit, that gets a little farther down into the recording. But man, right out of the gates, it starts sounding exactly the way I love the recordings to sound. A lot of interplay, just grooving, smoking. I think the first tune is pretty fast. So I mean, it was right up my alley, what I was looking for. And congratulations on the recording.
Oh, thank you. You're very kind.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about this. Now, you spent a long time. You've played with a lot of different national and international well-known musicians, one of which being Ornette Coleman. And this is sort of an homage to Ornette, right?
Pretty much everything I do, I'm sure, is a is a default homage to Ornette. Yeah. But on this particular recording, especially Dee Dee, is a tune off the old Golden Circle albums. And when I was in Berkeley, when I was a student, we did Dee Dee on my senior recital. And the first tape that I sent Ornette, when I was trying to get in touch with him to study with him, I sent him a tape of that. So this was coming full circle for me.
Yeah, and I mean, just reading a little bit of your bio, I mean, I didn't realize, I mean, Ornette, you're like one of the few keyboardists, pianists that actually recorded and performed with him, right? He didn't do that a lot with a lot of different keyboardists and pianists. I mean, you were like one of the ones.
Yeah, when I was at Berkeley, I've heard that there was a new piano teacher on the faculty who said he had played with Ornette. And to me, that was like, you could have told me he'd been to the moon and I would have believed it sooner than that. But I tracked him down, Bruce Thomas, and ended up studying with him. And he gave me a lot of information from the work he had done with Ornette and helped put in touch with him. So always lots of thanks go out to Bruce.
Yeah, I mean, what an experience that must have been. And I mean, a lot of, you know, when you're playing with somebody like that, that obviously gets into your playing and it obviously expands your playing in ways that you could never expand it if you were playing in other situations. So when you come in and you come up to night visitors and you decide to record something like this, what was the background? What was the concept to sit down? Were a lot of these tunes already written and then you put them all together onto the recording, or did you write them specifically for the recording?
I think the earliest one on there might be from the late 80s, maybe.
Okay.
And yeah, the latest ones I wrote like in one afternoon, a few weeks before the session.
Oh, really?
I pulled some stuff from decades past, you know, oh, this seems like it would go with the rest of them and that type of thing. Really, this recording was so much about the band.
Yeah.
But I don't know if you do this. Do other people do this where when I'm falling asleep at night, I start putting bands together in my head sometimes? And, you know, they don't always include me. It might be like all-star bands of, you know, deceased people or something like that. Or it might be groups of my friends and that type of thing. And so I was about to drop off, and suddenly, as you know, the other two people on the recording, Charnette Moffett and Greg Bendian, somehow it got into my head, I wonder what they'd sound like together. And all of a sudden, it seemed so obvious. They seemed to have so much in common. And yet, it was interesting because I didn't actually know what we'd all sound like together. And yet, I knew it would work because I knew what they had in common. And I immediately sensed what I would have to do to make it come together from my end. So I almost woke myself up when I thought about that. It was amazing. And the other good thing about it, I knew it was a good idea, was because I couldn't predict how it was going to sound, but I wanted to hear it just from the idea, you know. So I thought, if I've got that feeling about it, other people might too. They'd say, oh, yeah, that's very interesting that he put those two guys together. I wonder what that sounds like.
Well, did you guys, I mean, let's talk about the guys in the band, because both of them are very accomplished musicians, obviously. And did you ever play with the other two? I mean, did the three of you ever play together in any other setting other than you putting this together in your mind and then bringing them into the recording session?
No, the only times I'd ever played with Charnette, let's see. I filled in for Jerry Allen at a sound check one time when Primetime was on the road with the quartet. He was in with Jerry. And I did a session with him, a jam session, informal thing at Ornette's house one time with him. And we played together for Nick's Memorial, the guitarist that used to play with Ornette.
So that was...
Anytime it was one of... We should do this again sometime, kind of a thing. And same situation with Greg, where I'd given him a tape of something that I'd done with Bottle Roy, the Indian tabla player that was in Primetime when I was. And I'd gone to see Greg's Mahavishnu Project cover band that he had doing the John McLaughlin tunes. And so we hit it off. We had lots of mutual interests and friends, and the first phone conversation I had with Greg, my wife and I were joking about it because it was like, you know, where they have those two twins separated at birth and they talk to each other later in life and find out that they use the same obscure brand of toothpaste or something like that. You know, it was that kind of thing where we just seemed to have just uncanny thing coming.
You know, it's interesting now that you say all that, because listening to this recording, there's so much interplay. I mean, you know, it's almost like you guys have been playing together for years when you're listening to this recording, because, you know, I wouldn't have ever thought that this is how the band got put together if you're listening to the recording. So talk a little bit about the process. I mean, did you send tapes back and forth, recordings back and forth, and say, hey, man, I'm checking this out, I'm checking that out, blah, blah, blah. I mean, you guys couldn't have rehearsed all that much. I'm sure you probably popped into the studio. So how did the process work?
it was all I could do to get everybody in the same room together. So absolutely no rehearsal.
Yeah. Wow.
We got in. And I think actually that tape of the tune Confidential that's on there might actually be the first notes we ever hit together.
Oh, really?
I think after my wife again was at the session, and after we had done a couple of tunes, we were walking into the booth to hear them playback, and Charnette said to her, "Oh, I guess Greg's played with Dave a lot." And she said, "Not really." So it was really, it really was crazy. It was like that. But another friend of mine said, "You know, it's funny. I've heard of tight bands," he says, "but this sounds like it's very loose. But everybody's listening to each other so hard. That's what's holding it together." And that is very much closer to the truth of what was going on, I think.
That's a great way to that's a great way to describe it. I mean, yeah, that he nailed it. He nailed it on the head. That's exactly what I was hearing. Yeah.
Well, you know, I didn't really realize until I went back to mix it and soloed up the bass and drum tracks and really analyzed some things. Really the amazing job that those guys were doing, both in giving me space, paying attention to what I was doing, but also being able to project their own thing at the same time, which of course is a very mature, wise, high level way to operate. I don't know that in a similar situation that I could have done it as well as they did. I don't even think that way. I mean, it's all I can do just to, you know, I think about playing the right notes for the situation, but the way that they just artfully were able to choose their spots and know when to hang back and when to follow and when to see an opening and project themselves, that really fabulous, and just the best of both worlds. As a matter of fact, when we were doing the recording at first and I was getting used to it, that's an amazing Hamburg Steinway they have at the WGBH studios here in Boston. And it was so sensitive compared to instruments that I get to play a lot that I couldn't believe the slightest shrug of a shoulder or something like that, and it would respond like a sports car or something, you know. And we were listening to playbacks, and everybody said, "What do you think, Dave? Sound good?" And I said, "The piano's too sensitive, and the rhythm section's too sensitive." Greg wheeled around at me and said, "Why would you say a thing like that?" Yeah, it's true. You know, not literally, but it really was amazing that I could do so little and have the piano respond that much, and also that the rhythm section would respond that profoundly. It was really was just a lush experience. They really spoiled
it. It sounds like it was better than what you would have even dreamt could have happened with this thought of putting this band together. And I mean, when I'm listening to this recording, there's just so much back and forth that now if you're just going in and you're, you know, bringing the tunes in and there's no rehearsal, you're in the studio, you're at it right off the bat. How much give and take was there before, you know, like, you know, when you're collaborating with people, especially, you know, the three of you that are like such high level players, there's always a little bit, "Hey, you know what? What if we do this? What if we do that?" It doesn't sound like you had a lot of time to even talk about that stuff. So you must have brought the charts in and said, "Well, let's do it." And organically, is that how it worked? Just organically, that's what happened. There couldn't have been a lot of back and forth and saying, "Let's adjust this chord or that chord or change this or that."
There was a little, and I know for like one tune in particular, I wanted to make sure I did. And that was an old tune of mine from, I guess, the early 90s called Chihuahua Pearl. Mm-hmm. And I had done that a couple of times on gigs with Greg. He and I have done a couple of kind of pickup gigs in Boston when he's come through town for other things and that type of thing. And sometimes when I write a tune, I don't know if this happens to other people, but I always think, well, I used to think, if I've written this tune, then I should be able to improvise on it masterfully, because this shows, this is the signpost of where I am in my personal development.
Mm-hmm.
And this means that if I can write this, I can play on it. But really, I think a lot of times the composition is just sort of like the summit of the mountaintop, and you can see where you need to be, but you're not there yet. And there have been a few tunes that I've written that I thought came off pretty well, but I couldn't play on them. And it really took me ages to get a conceptual grounding that caught up with the composition. And Chihuahua Pearl was one of them. But first time I played it with Greg, his concept for it was so strong. It was, he played it better than me. So I thought, if I ever do anything with Greg, I want to make sure we get Chihuahua Pearl on the record, because he has such a great vision for it. But you were saying something about I must have been surprised. I was not surprised at all. I knew all I had to do was not screw it up. But I knew if I could get those guys in the same room, it would be great. That it would just be, again, as long as I didn't screw it up, it could not be anything but good.
You know, let's talk a little bit about the compositional aspect of it, and then also soloing over it, because I love talking to, you know, a lot of the musicians I have on here that have written a lot of originals and composed a lot, and they're putting out a recording. A lot of the feedback I get, and you tell me what you think, but a lot of them have to write the tune, put it together, arrange it, and then when they come in to record, they're not coming in as the composer arranger, they're coming in as the player, so that they can separate themselves. Otherwise, they're going to sit there and drive themselves crazy trying to play over it. I think you just talked a little bit about that. Is that kind of the process? You got to come in and say, you know what? I'm coming in now. I'm going to play this. I'm not going to worry about that I wrote this and I should change this or do this or do this. This is what it is, and I'm coming in and I'm going to throw it down now because I'm pretending that I'm just separate from the whole situation. I'm actually playing on it rather than the entire composer, arranger, and player.
Well, you know, I was also worrying about how the engineer was doing, how the hotel rooms were, how the, you know, on and on and on and on. So to tell you the truth, when I actually got to think about being the composer, being the player, that was a load off my mind. So, you know, it's like this interview. This is the best part of my day. If I get to talk about music, I'm in good shape.
There you go. Yeah, it's like, you know, I think a lot of people that are watching this that are not musicians don't realize, like, if you're running your trio and you're playing at a club, you're worried about getting there. You're worried about the sound check. You're worried about everything else. And then you're sitting there at the beginning and you're counting heads to see how many people are coming in. And, you know, and then when you can finally start playing, well, that's the easy part. That's like you get to finally chill out and relax a little bit, you know. So,
but I know there were times when I was younger where I would get to the gig, if it was a particularly ambitious one to book or put together for whatever reason,
yeah,
where I would get to the gig and realize that I hadn't done my homework because I'd been so busy trying to put the darn thing together. So, yeah, that was a good lesson to get out of the way early in life, I'll tell you.
Yeah, and that's something that a lot of people, unless they're in the business and in the music business, don't even think about. But that's one of those curses of being in like the jazz business, where, you know, we don't have the luxury of having a bunch of managers and agents walking around and carrying our stuff in and all that. We're kind of like doing everything ourselves. So, hey, let's talk a little bit. So Night Visions, and of course you can see the link down below, but it's available at DaveBryant.bandcamp.com. I encourage everyone to go check this out because it's a great listen, a lot of energy. As we're talking, I'm sure you're hearing what we're talking about. It's something that everybody needs to go check out and pick up. But you know, you brought up the points, and we're talking about how you came into the studio. Everybody sort of had never played before together at one time. And then take the last three tracks that are on this, Night Vision, Night Visitors, and it's part one, part two, and part three. And it, to me, for you guys to be able to do those three parts, and let's talk a little bit about it so the viewers can understand what we're talking about. But I mean, there's a theme running through it, but it's very kind of free jazz almost, right? You're playing off of, there's a lot of space. There's a lot of electronic happening. It just seems to me like that's something that you would have to do several times at least to get everybody on the right concept to do that. Is that still something that people, the other guys could came in and just understood the concept behind what you were trying to get and were able to achieve it like in one or two takes?
Those were three first takes. Bing, no, bing, bing.
No kidding. Wow.
The first and the third, I had specifically requested that Greg bring his Glockenspiel with him because he's a great mallets player as well as a drummer. And it's amazing when you hear on that because he's improvising kind of like me. His phrasing and everything else and the way he puts it together, I don't know if he always plays like that. I don't know if he was paying close attention to what I was doing and consciously, you know, trying to do something that would go along with it. But again, it just couldn't have been more perfect. But before we started, I said, hey, have you got like a soft mallet I could hit the strings and the piano with? And he goes, sure. Throws it across the room. I catch it. I say, all right, go. And we started playing.
No kidding.
The first part of that, the 10-minute segment, was the first pass. And then the second one was the second pass there. And right before that, because these were the last three things we recorded. And I think those were the last things we did for the day. But before that, he had also brought his Doombeck with him.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had one tune left. I brought in all these tunes, but I was kind of ready to go different places if we had to, because I knew they'd be able to do anything. But still, you don't know until you get there if things are going to be seeming to lead a certain way, or if they particularly seem like they're going to be into a certain kind of bag. But anyway, I had one tune left that I didn't plan on being a Middle Eastern groove with the Doombeck, but that's what we had. And so I thought, well, we could kind of do this over a drone. So I asked Charnette for a vamp in A flat, mm-hmm. and we were off.
Yeah,
and that was it. So the little drone underneath we added afterwards, and we really sweated the transition going from between the first acoustic part into that middle electric part with the Doombeck, and then back into the other acoustic improvisation. The first one, there's a sound where the sounds like the drone is coming out of this bong where I'd hit the strings with the mallet. And we got that effect. And then at the end, you hear the drone kind of fading out. And fading in is Greg had started that second improvisation bowing one of the what do you call them on a Glockenspiel?
One of the bars.
Yeah.
One of the Glockenspiel bars. Yep.
And getting this kind of nice high harmonic. And so we overlap those together on the edit on the way out. So you can hear those if you download the track separately. You got to spring for the CD.
Well, that is why. I mean, Night Visitors. What's the thought? I mean, where did the title come from?
This is not where it came from, but this is where the cover came from. Is last year, my wife and I went with a tour group to Morocco, and we were knocked out by the experience of being out in the Sahara and under the stars and that type of thing. I should get the cover so you can see it.
Yeah.
So this photo is actually by an Iranian-born photographer that lives here in Massachusetts named Babak Tefreshi. And so my wife actually found this online. I've talked a lot about my wife today. She'll be glad to hear that. But on the back here is a photo that was taken by one of our traveling companions. And that's actually my wife there on the middle camel. But see, we got the nice shot of the three camels.
Wow.
So sort of like the three night visitors there.
Yeah. Wow.
But anyways, that was very evocative. I'm not sure. You know, I just one of those things where an act of desperation and that three night visitors for that little suite there came to mind. And then I guess that sort of implies kind of a desert kind of a thing. And then I thought three night visitors is kind of a mouthful for the album title, but I thought maybe just night visitors.
That's yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, that's it. I was wondering where that came from, because really, when you're listening to those three tracks, Night Visitors 1, 2, and 3, I mean, you know, it kind of gives you like that interstellar kind of thing. You know, you're kind of feeling like you're out in orbit somewhere. I mean, it's really it's apropos. It's a great title.
Yeah, and you can really hear what consummate compositional improvisers Greg and Charnette are too. Just really great. Just one of those things where it was just you didn't have to think, all right, I don't hear anything happening in that instrument right now, I better do something.
Right.
It was totally easy. You know, it's just a feeling that you know, I could have passed out and everything would have just gone on fine.
You know, it's interesting you brought that up, improvisational. Of course, I can't talk because it's already almost 6 o'clock here in Chicago and I'm burned out. But anyways, the improv aspect of being a composition, you know, I call it spontaneous composition, right, in a lot of aspects. Paul Wertico is a good friend of ours here in Chicago, you know, masters that here in Chicago. And obviously he goes all over. I'm sure you probably know Paul, but, you know, that's what he talks about. It's that spontaneous composition. And there's such an art to that, because when you really are able to do that, it makes total sense to the listener and to the musicians. And you can really, you know, grow the composition organically when you're doing that. And of course, the people that try to do that without doing all of the background and without really learning about it and without really studying and practicing, it doesn't sound like that. So when you first got involved in that kind of I mean, was that something that directly came out of your experiences, like playing with Ornette? I mean, that had to help grow and open up your ears and open up your mind and expand everything to a point where, you know, now you're probably constantly growing creatively with it. But you must have had some sort of an incredible experience with him, surrounded that kind of a thought process.
Yeah, so much of what we talked about with him was compositional techniques. Yeah. And so much of what I was interested in, I've been thinking about that, because usually when I'm answering questions about what was he like, what were his interests, what did he say to you, that type of thing. And it's occurred to me how what he said to me was probably to some extent inspired by what I was asking for, even if not even verbally. What I was asking for, but both what I needed, whether I wanted it or not, and also where I seemed to be headed musically. But just talking about things, particulars of like creating a phrase from the ground up with intervals, you know, that type of thing, and making sure it's structurally sound, architecturally, almost like a building, and just proportionate sizes of intervals and how one follows the other. Then the overall length of the phrase. Then you've got how the phrases stack up together. And Ornette had a very modular way of composing that went from strength to strength to strength. So he could have like 4 or 5 lines written of a composition, and you could take bars or even whole lines and switch them around. And because you didn't have things like transitional phrases, passing tones in the phrases, any kind of weakness like that. Since everything was strong, everything was totally modular and interchangeable, and you could switch things up and just work in formal terms like that. But the whole thing with the compositional improvising, for me, is being able to be in the moment for the improvising and yet be able to have that bird's eye view, to have a sense of the big picture. Yeah. And what chorus are we on in the solo, kind of a thing? Am I in the second chorus or the 30th chorus, you know, and having a real sense of form of the overall sweep of the piece, and some sort of sense of not just is it working right now, but what's it going to sound like next week?
You know, I'm always curious when you're talking about Ornette, but when I'm talking to different musicians who have had such great mentors, right? The playing with like a legend like that. And 9 times out of 10, and it sounds like you had one of these experiences where they wanted to make sure they gave back to the younger musicians. They wanted to give you feedback. They weren't just sitting there shaking their head or just didn't talk to you or whatever. And then if you were like doing something horrible, they just got rid of you. You know, I mean, that a lot of these older guys, and you tell me if I'm wrong, really wanted to give back to the younger generation to keep the music moving forward. It sounds like that's what Ornette was doing.
I think the reason I was able to get along with him as well and as long as I did, and I started studying with him in the early 80s, kind of informally and hanging out at rehearsals with the first prime time and that type of thing, but was that I just had the capacity to sit there and talk notes with him. Hmm. And he would, that was his favorite thing to do. He used to say, I'm a note man. But yeah, no, he just a fabulous human being, and not disappointing at all. Everything you would want to think he was just an endlessly creative, fascinating person. At just any time of the day or night, any life activity, no matter how mundane, was an opportunity for creativity. So yeah, it was fabulous. But yeah, you got a lot of input from him. Yeah, no question. Yeah. And I was like, bring it on.
Well, and then you're able to pass that experience along with all of your other experiences on to the next generation through your teaching and through your recording and everything. So I think, you know, it's so important, because I think a lot of younger people, when they're going to jam sessions, they're sitting in, they're doing different things, they don't get the opportunity to get that kind of mentoring a lot of times if they're just popping in and popping out, or unless they're studying with somebody that had experiences like that, that can pass it down. Because I mean, a lot of the younger musicians, you know, they'll watch YouTube, they'll listen to some recordings, pop into a jam session, and that's their experience. And then they get out of school and they're, you know, wondering where the gigs are. And it's like, you know, it's to be able to be mentored and be able to talk to people that have had those experiences and have had to be the ability to actually talk to the legends, like you had the ability to learn from the legends, that when they study with you, they're getting all of this extra knowledge, which is an incredible opportunity. So I'm sure you pass all that on to your students as well.
I try to, whether they want it or not.
Well, Dave, I want to thank you so much for jumping on. Congratulations on this new recording, Night Visitors. It's available, davebryant.bandcamp.com. We got it linked up. And of course, you can get all of the information at, should we send them over to your other website too, dbryant.com as well? That's up and running as well, so we can send them over there.
dbryantmusic.com.
dbryantmusic.com. Got it. Okay. Yeah, we'll send them over there too. But hey, thanks so much. And hopefully, as I've been saying way, way, way too much on this show, hopefully we'll get to actually see and experience your music in person sometime soon, rather than just virtually and digitally. Hopefully the coronavirus situation calms down enough to get out there and start playing some gigs and get out there and do a little bit of touring. So hopefully we'll see you here in Chicago at some point.
Well, I've been fortunate enough to come out to Chicago a few times and play with folks out there. What a great music city and a great bunch of musicians. But a student of mine, Mark Reardon, lived there for a long time and had me out. Ken Vandermark is someone I know from the Boston area, so no ages. So lots of great people. I can't wait to come back. Thank you so much.
No, well, hey, thanks, Dave. We appreciate you being on. And of course, we'll send everybody over to pick up this new recording. So take care and appreciate you being on the show.
Thank you so much.
All right. Thanks, Dave.
Bye-bye.
He wants to get out and check this out, because I flipped it on and I listened to a lot of music, and it's all really good. Trust me. I love listening to tunes, but man, when I put this on, I was like, whoa, it was not what I expected to hear. And right out of the gates, it blew me away. And then as I got deeper into the recording, it continued to blow me away. So go pick it up. DaveBryant.bandcamp.com. Be sure to check that out. And thanks again to Dave for being on here. And congratulations on all of the success with this recording. And again, hopefully we'll see him here in Chicago at some point, live and in person. And I do want to mention, tomorrow I'm not going to be on tomorrow. We had a little scheduling stuff, and I've got a busy schedule tomorrow. So we're going to take the day off tomorrow. But on Friday, we're back, and we've got our Chicago Blues and Beyond hits. And Dave Katzman is going to be guest hosting with me as usual. And also wanted to make sure that everyone knew the super special guest for that day is the legend, Billy Flynn. Billy Flynn is on tomorrow, Friday at 6 p.m. So that's part of our Blues in Chicago and Beyond. Dave Katzman co-hosting, so I appreciate that. Appreciate everyone for watching. Of course, this entire show will be up on Chicago Music Revealed very shortly. And please leave us a comment. Please leave us a message. And as I always say, if you like what you hear, tell your neighbors, tell your family, call the grandkids right here, Friday, 6 p.m., Chicago Music Revealed. Again, thank you so much for watching. Thanks to everyone for listening on the podcast, and we will see you on the next broadcast.